is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
To London. The holdup in Heathrow and other major airports has to do with blaming someone for bad data entered into the flight control computer that controls most of Europe. It is a revelation to me that the blame game now extends to across the channel. I read from the London Times reporting on the explanation for this enormous backup of planes over Europe. The Prime Minister's official spokesman has refused to rule out suggestions that a flight plan by a French carrier may have corrupted the system. French carrier. And then we learn further from this same spokesman. Asked if officials would speak to counterparts across the English Channel, the spokesman said, quote, "You would expect them to be speaking regularly with other countries, but I'm not aware of any specific conversations with French counterparts." I go to Simon Constable in the south of France, an Englishman, a member of the United Kingdom's citizenry. And Simon, as an American, I sat back and I thought, so it's true. 1,000 years later, the English cannot get over the fact that the Normans conquered Mother Britain. And you still take an opportunity whenever it's offered to blame the French. Does this entertain you, Simon, or do you just shake your head at your countrymen?
Good day to you, John. Yes, I'm laughing my head off as quietly as I can. This is actually really funny. It's this rivalry between the two countries that's been going on, as you say, for 1,000 years of throwing insults at each other. It's like a inter-family rivalry, and it's very strange and very funny. And I cannot believe that the French would have done anything deliberately, or even that they're even possibly to blame for this. It really doesn't make any sense. Sorry. It is just very funny. It does make a change, though, from something we've had for a number of years now, which is blame the Russians. Like, right. Anything happens. Can't do your homework? Blame the Russians. Now it's, you know, the air system in the UK breaks down, blame the French, which is novel. It's a nice return to what we've been doing for 1,000 years in Britain. I'm sure they're innocent.
It's important to say how well you are being treated as an Englishman in the south of France. You're in farm country. You're surrounded by the agrarian base of France, not the sophisticates of Paris. And yet you're treated extremely generously. You're given civic lessons and French lessons. They tolerate everything you think and do as if you're one of them because you live there now. Is all that true, Simon?
Absolutely, it's true. Absolutely. We were just talking with the electricity provider earlier, and they were very helpful to me on the phone, even though my French is a little bit broken, or quite a lot broken. But I managed to communicate enough, and they're very kind and organizing stuff. We weren't quite sure who the provider was for quite a while, and they understood that we weren't deliberately trying to rip off a massive electricity company in any way. So that's all good.
Very kind.
As
compared to how you would have been treated in Scotland, we can only guess that you would be bailed out sometime in the first week of jail time.
Absolutely. I'm sure that would have happened. Maybe I'd have been swinging from a gibbet in the town square of Edinburgh. So who knows? Who knows what would have happened? But it's very nice here, and people are very kind. As long as one is polite, I think that's the suitable response.
Simon lives in the south of France, which is paradise. And we mean to mention the climate now, because the last time we spoke, it was extremely hot. And Simon, having grown up in England, the north of England, is not used to hot weather. And so it was oppressive. But it's cleared, Simon tells me. It's cool now. And we're within hours of a super blue moon, the Sturgeon moon of August, the second full moon in the month. And Simon tells me his local animal, that is his cat, knew about it before Simon did. Correct, Simon?
Absolutely. At 4:45 one morning, actually yesterday morning, it woke me up, banging on the door, came in, demanded to be fed instantly, and then continued to spend an extra hour and a half running up and down the corridors and around the rooms, making a lot of noise. So clearly something was up, and now I know why.
Right. It is the Sturgeon moon, and then the harvest moon comes at the end of September, which takes us to our concern for Simon's piece at Forbes. those of you who enjoy the south of France or vacation time, be prepared to need a vacation in September. Simon, you've done some history digging here. What happens to the exchanges, the NASDAQ and the Dow, in the month of September?
This is very interesting. I found this piece of research from CFRA, which is an investing research company, and they look at trends and repeating factors that happen throughout the years for the stock market. So that'd be S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, which is the tech heavy index. And what we find with the S&P 500 is that it's unlike any other month in the year. It's the only one month where you're more likely to have losses than gains. Most of the time, there's something of a gain every single month except September. And there's only 44% chance of a gain for September, making it the only one. So you're likely to see it go down. You're also going to see something similar with the NASDAQ. It's not quite identical, but again, September is a bad month for the NASDAQ as well on average. So of course, I'm saying this on the air with you now. It's bound to go wrong and probably be a monster rally in September, but that's what the history says. And I'm sticking with the history. You know, does it mean you shouldn't invest? No, it probably is a good time to invest. If the stock prices go down, you can get them cheaper and then just hold on to them for another few years. But if you already own them, obviously it's going to hurt when they go down. So it is interesting, not a good period. And of course, we know about what happens in October sometimes. We sometimes see massive crashes like the crash of 87, which was absolutely brutal. But again, that bounced back.
You have recommendations, however. What is doing very well now, I thought, oh, he's kidding, footwear. Footwear is doing well. You recommend Crocs. I've heard about this, Simon. This is a millennial Gen Z fashion statement, I believe. You also recommend MetLife, insurance companies, and household products. So pretty dull stuff, Simon. None of the thrills of Tesla.
None of the thrills of Tesla, but there are things that you need. I mean, one thing we do know in September is that people go back to school. They start the academic year. They start the school year. They need shoes. We generally do need shoes. Even people who like to go barefoot in the summer will need shoes as you get into the fall and then the winter. This is, again, all from research from CFRA. They're looking at the shoe business, the household goods business, which is, you know, Colgate, Palmolive is one of them. And then you've got the insurance companies, and people think about, okay, well, the winter's coming and maybe we'll have a storm, maybe we'll have a hurricane. If the roof blows away, I'll need my insurance to be there and have it handy so that I can get a new roof if it's gone. So all of these things make sense. And no, they're not sexy, but most good investing isn't an exciting thing. If you want excitement, go to the horse races or go to the track or something, whatever it is you want to do. Investing is often just really boring.
An Englishman in the south of France waiting for the super blue moon, the sturgeon moon, and then looking to the harvest moon at the end of September when we can escape the history of September sell-offs. I'm John Batchelor.